One of the things that stood out in here is the statement that it's Jehovah that separates the levels. So the enmeshment arises when levels are confused for us. I think that's the thing. So competing affections can be a big player in it. And I think the more in touch with the Lord's ends, the clearer things become. And of course, the Lord's end is a heaven from the human race, and the means is the regeneration of the human mind. So then there's an opportunity somewhere in there. I'm not saying it's easy, but there's an opportunity then to see that when we're in the contact with another, that that is a space for attending to states rather than to persons. So, you know, with the idea of a person, there is a whole enmeshment of history, often, you know, if it's family and friends, there'll be, you know, a lot of history, a lot of associations tied up there, the hurt, and also those that we favor because they seem to be able to just excite our own proprial loves in a way which affirms us or affirms that sense of self that's tied to that. You know, the enmeshment is so complex, there's no way that we're going to be able to sit and figure it out. But what we can do is do what is asked, which is to attend to what's arising in the moment, because that is what the Lord is permitting in the contact. And there will be something in that. And it's stepping back from the idea that we can affect anything other than being able to listen to what's arising and allowing for what's there to come, to allow the question that's being carried to present itself. And it's not necessarily in order to provide an answer. What it is, it's about becoming aware of the questions that are in the midst of us, because answers are stalled questions. That's what they are, because we are led and guided and directed by the questions we carry. And they're open-ended. You know, that's the nature of them. We like to have answers. We like to nail things down, and we like to be able to go to some sort of method or formula that's going to solve the problem. But in this work, those are the things we're letting go of as much as anything, so that we can live in the process and be comfortable being there. And that's a challenging thing. I mean, something that sort of fits with that from the actual text here at the reading is just the opening statement, 7774. And Moses said, "Thus said Jehovah, about midnight I will go out into the midst of Egypt, and every firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, about to sit upon his throne, even unto the firstborn of the maidservant that is behind the millstones, and every firstborn of beast." So if you think about Pharaoh as proprium, all those elements of religion that we have gathered together to conceal the nature of the proprium, then what this is saying is that that is going to be exposed from root to branch. There's nothing that can be done about this process. It has to come to pass because the Lord has spoken it. So this isn't if or maybe. This is firm, you know, that the process has to unfold because love demands it. And it's all about liberation. So death is resurrection, right? Like, angels have no concept of death. So death means resurrection. So the death of the firstborn is the resurrection of the heavenly proprium. Because when that dies or is cast off, or our sense of self is no longer attached to it, then the Lord is there in his fullness, providing us with a new sense of self. And that's what liberation is. You know, our captivity is being bound to that sense of self that's developed out of the love of self and love of the world. That's hell for us because it's proprium. And it rejects the Lord. It rejects his good and truth. It only uses it for its own ends, and that's the casting of what is holy to dogs and pearls before swine. Like, it's when those things of the Lord are used to conceal the true nature of opprobrium, that's what's being done there. But of course, the things of the Lord, what is good and true, can never be destroyed. It's impossible for them to be destroyed, because what is good and what is true is what is real. It's an apparent destruction as those things are cast off, and the true nature and quality of that infernal self is seen, and that's its judgment. So when you think about it, you know, every truth that is integrated into a life, in one sense, raises us and destroys its opposite, in the sense of pushes what is opposite out into the extremities where it belongs. And that truth then is the Lord we're joined to, because it's holding at bay what is of the hells. So as these things get worked into our life, they form a structure within the mind, a new form into which the Lord is good can be present and held in the mind. So good brings forth its truth. And so we live in this constant battle that is tension. There's a tension between these things that are higher and lower, but it's the battle within that that brings what is higher down into the lower, where it can then rule. You know, once a truth is seen to be true, its opposite has no power, because you won't entertain it. It's only in those areas where we have an investment in what is untrue, because it suits our sense of self, that gives the hells the ability to remain, and or those molesters to be present. The lower earth state is a mixed state in that sense.